not because of foreign wars we wage, more to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws and too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? The Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people trying to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the dance. Right to self-defense. They say you're safer, but they don't make sense. Dangerous money will not turn into guns. All we need to know is asking more. All we buy is made out of foreign shorts. Come a day when you'll be real hell to pay. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the dance. Hello and welcome to today's broadcast of Tap Into the Truth. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing, with all of the usual caveats, of course. But as always, I'm your ever so humble host, Tim Tapp, coming to you live from historic Rome County, Tennessee. Quick shout out to Chief from Simple Facts of Life, who has already joined us in the chat room. I'm sure a few more folks will be joining us in a little bit. But I want to thank everyone for being here and listening, whether you're making your way in here live, or whether you're listening at KYAH 540 AM, Utah's Talk Authority, or listening in wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that be Spotify or iHeartRadio or iTunes or Spreaker or wherever it may be. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for being here. I certainly appreciate it. Hopefully you're going to have an interesting series of topics this evening. I say hopefully because the plan is we are scheduled to be joined by Mr. Dan Subutnick. He is, of course, professor of law at Touro Law School in Central Insip, New York, and also the author of the book Toxic Diversity, Race, Gender, and Law Talk in America. We'll be discussing some of the circumstances in and around the apparent disappearance of the presumption of innocence. And in the meanwhile, let's go ahead and jump right into the show. before that, I just want to let everybody know Chief's glib comment in the chat room. Where else would he be? I obviously have him confused with someone who has a life. I stand corrected, sir. Regardless of your reason for being here, Chief, I appreciate it, and thanks for being here. All right, let's jump in, shall we? Going to be a little heavy on abortion news to start with, because there's a couple of stories that really, where do I even begin? Well, let's start with the fact that the Senate voted on a bill that would have protected, or at least they tried to vote. Let me rephrase it. They tried to vote on a bill that would have protected babies that survived an abortion attempt. It was a bill that was intended to stop infanticide and require care to be given to babies that were born alive, survivors of an abortion attempt. Senate Democrats, however, blocked the request by Republicans to vote on the bill that would stop infanticide, and provide medical care and treatment for babies who were born alive after botched abortions. The vote to stop the Democrat filibuster needed 60 votes, but Democrats stopped the chamber from getting enough. They literally filibustered, or at least they gave the threat to filibuster and required the Republicans to vote the filibuster close, vote for cloture, 60 votes required. Now, personally, had I been in charge of the Senate, if I had been Mitch McConnell, I would have made those bad boys stay on the floor. I would have made those five slamma jammal Democrats that are so very committed to killing young babies even after they've made the way out of the womb. I would have said, stand here in front of God and America and the rest of the world and keep talking. You do a filibuster the right – don't just threaten a filibuster. You do the filibuster the right way. You stand there and you talk for hours and you keep up the time on the floor and you do what you're supposed to do. Show your commitment. Well, regardless of commitment or lack thereof, they certainly have showed their true colors. The Senate voted 53-44 against ending the filibuster and allowing a debate and vote on the bill itself. Every Republican present voted to end the filibuster, along with Democrats Joe Manchin, West Virginia, Bob Casey, and Doug Jones. While all other Democrats voted against the bill, Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who supports abortion, did not vote, hurting the effort to collect the 60 votes necessary, of course. Pro-life Republican Senators Tim Scott and Kevin Cramer were unable to attend the vote due to flight delays, but would have voted to support the bill. It would not have been enough. Everyone should pay close attention, boys and girls. If you're someone in the middle ground, if you're someone who is not necessarily already committed via political mandate, if you're actually an independent thinker and you want to decide for yourself who you're going to vote for, regardless of party affiliation, but you have a strong adversity to murdering children that survived an abortion attempt, keep in mind that every Democrat senator who has previously, currently announced that they are running for president, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, Kirsten Gillibrand, and Bernie Sanders, they all voted to block the anti-infanticide bill. During the debate, several Democrats misled. They didn't just mislead. Several of them flat out lied. But several of them misled the Senate about the bill and falsely claimed that the measure would ban abortions or ban late-term abortions. They made the usual pro-abortion claims that pro-life lawmakers hate women and somehow abortion is women's health. I'm yet to understand that argument and still would love for somebody to actually make that argument, make it a legitimate argument. Win me over. Hey, I'm ready for a flat-out Steven Crowder moment here. Change my mind. Abortion is not women's health. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska grew increasingly frustrated as the debate went on. And he got more and more frustrated because of the false claims that the abortion advocates made about the anti-infanticide legislation. Now, let me paint the picture. The bill itself does not address abortion at all, except to say if the child survives that attempt, it's to be treated the same as any other born child. It essentially undoes some of the worst parts of the New York late-term abortion bill, because part of the bill there is if the child survives the abortion attempt, if it's a botched abortion and the kid survives under the current law in New York right now, stab it in the eye with a freaking pair of scissors. It's okay. I'm tired of being nice about this. I'm going to start being a little more graphic myself. Dan Perkins kind of inspired me on that. It's time to be graphic because this is what they believe. This is what they're calling for. And they use nice, cute, little non-humanistic euphemisms to try and cover the fact that they want you to kill your baby. Anyway, Ben Sasse said, quote, I know a lot of opponents of this bill sincerely believe the talking points that they read from their staffs. We've heard speech after speech after speech that have nothing to do with what's actually in this bill. I urge my colleagues to picture a baby that's already been born, that's outside the womb, gasping for air. That's the only thing that today's vote is actually about. We're talking about babies that have already been born. Nothing in this bill touches abortion access. But leading pro-life senators were on point. Several of them made the case. Sadly, the Democrats are still on the record now, standing in the way with the threat of a filibuster. So they didn't actually filibuster. That's the other thing. Why don't we make Democrats filibuster? Ted Cruz actually filibustered. Rand Paul actually filibustered. Why don't we make Democrats actually filibuster? Point of order. We are going to filibuster. All right. Now come on up. Here's the microphone. Who's starting off for you guys? What? We're not actually going to. All right. Well, then we're going to proceed. We have closure. We're moving on. If you're not actually going to do it, then you're not doing it. Senator Mike Rounds of South Dakota said, quote, at a bare minimum, every one of us should be able to agree that infanticide or the killing of a baby after it's been born alive is unacceptable. This is a separate issue from abortion, which is abhorrent in and of itself. Kudos to Mike Rounds. High five over the radio. Senator Steve Daines of Montana added to that, we are not here to debate abortion. That is not what this bill is about. We are here today to decide whether or not it should be legal in the U.S. to kill or neglect an infant who has been born alive after a botched abortion. Senator Joni Ernst agreed, saying, all my colleagues across the aisle are saying this about abortion. This is about a mother's health care. That's absolutely incorrect. We are talking about a human life. What this bill does is address the health care of a baby that is born alive after a botched abortion. We're not talking about abortion, folks. We're talking about the life of a child that is born. Leading pro-life groups condemned the 44 Democrats who blocked the anti-infanticide bill. This from the National Right to Life Organization's president, Carol Tobias, saying, quote, today we saw the extremism of the abortion industry's agenda on full display. The 44 members of the United States Senate who voted against this bill now need to explain to their constituents why they believe abortion is such an absolute right that it protects what amounts to infanticide, willfully withholding life-saving care from a born alive infant. Thanks to the governors of New York and Virginia and 44 pro-abortion Democrat senators, the extreme pro-abortion agenda has been laid bare for all of us to see. They believe it should be legal to kill unborn babies for absolutely any reason, at any time, up to and including the moment of their birth, and even in the moments after they are born. Students for Life of America President Christian Hawkins called Senator Ben Sasse's Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act the bare minimum standard for valuing infant life. as everyone should be able to look at a baby born during an abortion and understand that a humane response is required. She continued by saying, the tragedy today is that even though a majority of senators voted to protect infants born alive during an abortion, the new math of the Congress means this is still a loss, as even with 53 in favor and 44 against, the 60-vote supermajority was not reached. Those senators who voted against this bill that absolutely protects human beings will have a lot to answer for when they face the voters. I'll go you one better. They're going to have a lot to answer for when they face their maker. Quick shout out to Kel, who's joined us in the chat room. Great show earlier tonight, Kel. Over there at Infidels Are Watching. Is not even an abortion issue in so much as it only circles around abortion. There was already a law in place that stated children who survive an abortion should be treated as if they are a human being. However, that law did not specify what that treatment entailed, and that failure to have that in place, thinking at the time that it would be common sense, thinking at the time that no one would be so evil as to take a knife and stab a child that survived the abortion attempt squarely in the head because it had the audacity to survive, thinking that we would never be so cruel, so dark, so empty in our souls that that would ever be a possibility. They didn't include the specifics because they thought common sense would tell you it survived, get it to the hospital. And if the parents still don't want it, put it up for adoption. For the love of all that's holy in heaven, for the love of the life that you have within your own chest, what are you people thinking that you are so committed to the notion, so committed to the idea that you have to protect abortion that you cannot even acknowledge that if the abortion provider botches the job, the kid doesn't deserve to live? Oh, it's just a collection of tissues. It's out. It's breathing. It's alive. Even by the standards that you left-wing mongoloid morons have set forth for the last several decades. It's alive by every possible meaningful fashion that not even you people in the past had the nerve to argue against. It's been alive since inception. But you don't want to acknowledge that. It's been alive since the heart started beating and brain activity began. Since the beginning, it was alive. But you people.
What do you mean, you people, Tim?
Idiots on the left who think abortion is a right. It's a right to murder an unborn child. Because it has the audacity to have been formed in my womb because I did something I wasn't mature enough and responsible enough to face the consequences of. I have been ashamed of our politicians here in the United States for some time, and I have particularly been ashamed of our Congress, and sadly enough, our House probably more so than our Senate, but when this happened, the Senate easily moved to the top spot. I'm more ashamed of the Senate after this vote than I was of the White House during the 8 years of Barack Hussein Alu Akbar Obama's occupancy. The nerve that these people have to not even acknowledge the basic humanity of a child that survived the attempt. This law had nothing in it that made it harder to get an abortion. It had nothing in it that would prevent you from going to one of these ridiculous late-term abortion-approved states and having a late-term abortion. The only thing it said, the only thing that was in this bill was, guess what? If your abortion provider, if you're selected, your choice of the individual that's going to murder your child on your behalf, is so incompetent that the child finds a way to survive, then so be it. Let it happen. Take that child to a hospital.
Get to the Idaho, New Mexico story. Consider this. When the kid finds out, read the first.
Yeah, okay. Chief's actually trying to move me along. I've only got a few minutes left, and I've got a little carried away with this. You're right, Chief. And this is actually the story in the show description. So Chief is right. I'm going to read the first few paragraphs, and then we're going to hit on this, because this is also an example of how bad things have gotten in this country. Don't forget the Senate. Imagine the following scenario. You're a happy boy. You're growing up in a middle-class home with two siblings. You enjoy playing outdoors with them, school's going well, and you think the world of your parents. Your dad is your hero, and you love your mom more than anyone in the world. Okay, easy enough to imagine so far, right? But then one day, you Google your family's name for a school assignment. Your teachers assigned the class project that has each student researching their family tree. And that is when you discover a series of news articles that appear to discuss your family. It seems that a man and a woman with the same names as your father and your mother sued an abortion clinic after giving birth to a baby they tried unsuccessfully to abort. The articles mentioned that there were already two children in the family, and it was the third baby they had tried to get rid of. Then, with growing horror, you try to fight off this inescapable realization. You are the third and youngest child. If the parents in the article are your parents, it means they traveled more than 700 miles from your home in Idaho to New Mexico to get an abortion. What is an abortion? You Google the word, and horrifying graphic pictures of bloody, broken babies show up on screen. The pictures blur as you sit and stare until your eyes water. Now, as unlikely as that story might sound to some of you out there, it may actually one day be true. Multiple media outlets now are reporting this past week that Bianca Coombs and Cristobal Ruiz traveled from Idaho to the Planned Parenthood in Albuquerque in February of 2016 when they discovered they were expecting their third child. They decided they could not afford another baby, and so they headed to New Mexico where they could escape the mandated waiting period in their home state that would have resulted in the baby being further along at the time of abortion. So Coons and Ruiz now claim that they used all of their remaining resources to pay for the trip and the abortion, which cost $400. Now, here's the bad news for the family. The abortion failed, and their little son is now 2 years old. We know this because Coons and family are suing Planned Parenthood for failing to abort their baby boy, demanding that the abortion organization pay for the cost of raising him because of, quote, medical negligence, resulting in him being born alive in the first place. Additionally, they're suing for breach of contract. After all, they paid Planned Parenthood to kill him, and uncharacteristically, surprisingly, Planned Parenthood failed. The abortion clinic had offered them a medical abortion, which means medication. They wanted to give him a pill. The Coons had taken one pill at the clinic and one a day later. The first pill caused extreme dizziness and nausea. But then when Coons checked into a local emergency room back in Boise, Idaho, the physicians there told the rather dismayed mother that her baby was perfectly healthy despite having taken the first pill. The Planned Parenthood staff advised her to take the second pill anyway. Perhaps that would kill the baby. But no such luck. Another round of blood work indicated that Coon's son was a fighter. And bless that child's poor, poor heart. And he was still alive and well, despite the best efforts of his parents and the abortion clinic staff. Coons and family
felt betrayed. This, after all, was not what they had paid for. Planned Parenthood offered her a follow-up abortion back in New Mexico, but the little boy's parents couldn't afford to go back and try again. And they said they couldn't afford a home turf abortion in Idaho either. And so Coons reluctantly gave birth, and the couple is now suing Planned Parenthood for a whopping $765,000 for the cost of raising an additional unplanned child. Now, actually, the way things are costing these days, that might actually not be enough. The lawsuit also states that the defendant's failure to properly supervise and administer the abortion service directly resulted in the failure of the pregnancy termination, which resulted in injury to the plaintiff's interest in family planning and their interest in financial planning for the future of their family. Someday this toddler will grow up. Someday he will find out that his parents tried to abort him and then resented raising him so much after that failed that they sued Planned Parenthood that had failed to kill him for the cost of his life with them. When he does, you can only imagine how he's going to feel, how devastated, how betrayed, how horrible he's going to feel. He will realize that his parents are sick people, that this is a sick culture that we now live in, and that legal abortion has poisoned everything. That realization will be gut-wrenching, just as it has for each of us who have confronted this awful reality in one way or another in this growing culture of death. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a true story. Kel in the chat room is like, why didn't they just adopt him out? Great question. Why didn't they follow the instructions? Why didn't they stay a little bit longer? Why? Why didn't they accept their third pregnancy as a blessing from God? There was a plan involved, after all. Quick shout out to Annie, the radio chick Eubelis, host of Southern Sense. She just joined us in the chat room. It is astounding. The kid is going to face a time when he's older that he's going to find out that this happened because it's on the internet forever. And now I put it out there some more. Other people will be talking about the story. Several people have already talked about the story, but it is every bit as sickening as our Senate's failure to pass legal protections for children that survive abortion attempts. But this family, you know, by now, we're 2 years in. By now, I'm at least praying that these parents have bonded with this little boy enough that they don't actually want to abort him anymore and don't want to adopt him out. But how are they going to look him in the eye when the time comes to explain to him what they've done? And he will know. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let me hit the Edwards Notebook and the Songs and Stories for Soldiers. And upon my return, if all goes as planned, I will be joined by Dan Sopotnik. So stay with me. I will be right back.
If a group of people are in a boat and one of them pulls out a gun and tries to shoot a hole in the bottom, the others would try to stop her to avoid a catastrophe. Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, if you look at the United States of America, like the lady trying to shoot a hole in the bottom of the boat and bring harm to the passengers, most Democrats, educators, crooked ministers, rhino Republicans, and nasty illegal border crossers are together working to literally sink the United States into a sea of oblivion. Democrats are already circling their dirty wagons and hope to shoot down President Trump's efforts to wrestle our republic away from the grip of slimy swamp dwellers who hope to sink our exceptional constitutional republic in a sea of victimhood obsession. no border protection, race or identity politics, socialism, unrestricted abortions, and all other evils. Our great America is under attack from numerous enemies from within who, like Khrushchev said many years ago, are trying to bury her. Thus, the time is now for we the people to join forces and prevent our constitutional republic from being completely turned into a socialist regime. I'm Ron Edwards. Join me Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on AmericaMatters.us, SHR Media, and Spreaker.
Ron Edwards, the new voice of America.
Sponsored by the Tri-County Liberty Coalition.
Dan Perkins here with your songs and stories for Soldiers.us, Veterans Tip of the Day. How do you know if you're getting the best medication when you're sick? Did you know that the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, reported recently that between 20% and 50% of all antibiotics prescribed in acute care hospitals are either unnecessary or inappropriate? The misuse of antibiotics has also contributed to the growing problem of antibiotic resistance, which has become one of the most serious and growing threats to public health in the United States. Here is your Songs and Stories for Soldiers tip of the day. Medicare and Medicaid have started a new policy called the Antibiotic Stewardship Program. The result is that hospitals, nursing homes, and other healthcare facilities must test you to make sure you're getting the right medication. The cost of the test is covered by Medicare. So go to songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us for more information about this important service. This has been your Veterans Tip of the Day.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for staying with us through that brief break. Certainly appreciate it when you do. It is now my honor to welcome to the show Mr. Dan Subutnick, professor of law at Choro Law School in Central Islip, New York, and, of course, the author of the book Toxic Diversity, Race, Gender, and Law Talk in America. Dan, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for your time this evening, and I hope you're doing well.
Thank you. I look forward to the program.
All right. Well, obviously, we have been witnessing over the course of the last decade or longer a slow march that has essentially eroded away the presumption of innocence. What do you see as being our biggest obstacle in trying to reverse this? And where is it that you feel like we had this triggering point, this tipping point, where now people openly call for believe the accuser before the presumption of due process being a requirement?
Yeah. Well, you've got the key question there. And what you're asking is, how did it come about? I suppose the answer is it came about in the same way that America has been silent, has not faced up to other kinds of criticisms, other kinds of gender criticisms or race criticisms or socioeconomic criticisms. There's a sense of guilt in many of us, and there's a sense that if we do speak up, we're going to be labeled, things that we don't want to be labeled. And you would think that grown-ups would be able to overcome such problems, but we're not entirely grown-ups. I mean, part of the problem is that some of us have overreacted in these cases, and then you get some of the horrible things that people have said on race and gender and socioeconomics, and you want to disassociate yourself. But I'm talking about rational people should not feel that they have to be silent on issues that they feel differently about from the feelings of the activists in those areas. That leads us nowhere. And not only does it lead us nowhere, it actually brings us into negative territory, because there are a whole lot of people who then say, I can't take this. I'm leaning in the other direction. I will not be part of a situation where I feel that my lips have to be sealed. So as a result, nothing gets accomplished, because there's no engagement. And that's what I call for, engagement across the board. And it's, I'm in the academic world. There's certainly no engagement in the academic world. We're supposed to have influence. You folks out there, not in the academic world, are supposed to trust us in the academic world. And I don't know why you're doing that. Because we're not to be trusted.
Yeah. Well, it is a shame that we've seen this ideology of political correctness become so pervasive that now you are instantly labeled if you even question the possibility of raising a question. And yeah. You talked about the grown-ups a bit, and that kind of goes to something I've been saying for a bit now. I seem to recall when I was a young lad in the younger grades of school, a little saying that we said quite often, and that being sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I'm not sure most of us have heard that.
We heard it, and we rolled with the punches when they came. But now that's almost what do they call that, a microaggression to say now?
Yeah.
Right, and I mean it's crazy, and so we've backed off. And I like to use the image of a blob of protoplasm that keeps on expanding and expand, like the blob, the famous movie The Blob, keeps expanding and expanding until somebody seeks to block it. But there's nobody there to block it. There are people who want to block it but feel powerless and are terrified of putting their names out there and being ridiculed and ridden out of town on a rail. So there's nobody to block it. And then there are other people who try to block it, but they can't block it because they're so crazed that the things they say are more off-putting and just fuel the energy of the social critics that we're referring to.
Right. It literally.
So you need people, grown-ups, to stand up and say, "Not so fast." Right. You know, you raised the subject for the evening, the question of believe women. You didn't refer to an article I just wrote. Let me just tell the readers about your listeners about this. I wrote an article called "Why Not Believe Women in Sexual Assault Cases." It's published in the Touro Law Review. It just came out a couple of days ago, and I pulled together a bunch of strands, which shows how widespread this idea is that women should be believed. I mean, it's crazy. It's when I say it's crazy, I don't mean no women should believe. I don't even mean that most women should not be believed. What I mean is that there are enough women out there who should not be believed, and there's evidence to it, and I bring to bear all of that evidence in my article, that one has to say, not so fast. Let's look at the facts. Let's not jump down Kavanaugh's throat or anybody else's throat until we size up the situation in the best way we can. I'm not asking for much. I'm sorry. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
Okay. Obviously, you're making a solid point, but we have seen this, and this is actually leading to some very negative aspects in our legal system, in so much of we have this a cookie cutter attempt at pushing cases through the court system. We have law enforcement that wants the easiest solution because, you know, usually the simplest solution tends to be the correct one, not just Arkham's razor, but tends to be reality. And unfortunately, it leads to this situation where if you prejudge, then you start looking for evidence that supports your prejudgment as opposed to evidence that may take you to a different direction. And we've seen falsely convicted individuals. This is serious consequences in the real world where, again, as you said, we're not saying don't believe women, don't believe the accusers. What we're saying is let's look at due process. Let's look at the presumption of innocence and let's have the case proven before we take steps. Is that such
a bad idea? That sounds great. But in a way it sounds banal, right? You say, let's just hear the case out before we make a decision, right? I mean, you go to law school, and even without going to law school, you're in a political science program. That's going to be a motto of yours. But what I want to show in my writings and in my the talking to you and your audience is that there are reasons not to believe women, or at least to question. It's not so much not to believe women, but to question women when they stand up and assert their claims. And that is, there's a whole lot, even today, 2019, there are a whole bunch of young women who are not prepared for the sexual experience that they give every indication of wanting. They feel guilty about it. They're trying to cover up the sexual experience so that their parents don't hear about it, their boyfriends don't hear about it, their friends don't hear about it. They've got religious scruples. These all play a role or can play a role in figuring out what's going on in a particular case. So once we say believe women, we're saying, well, there's nothing special about sex, the sexual experience. Let's just treat this as any other case, as a case of robbery or a case of burglary. But it's not that, because in these cases, some of the women, and many of the women, are sexually aggressive. They're sexually aggressive, and at the same time, they're held back by all the things I just referred to, the guilt, the need to persuade themselves that they're innocent. So it's not that the women are lying in these cases so much as they're deceiving themselves and deceiving other people and causing enormous harm in that respect.
All right. So in your book, Toxic Diversity, a lot of the messaging there is about this reality, and it's also about how it's really changing the perception within the legal system in a fashion that's completely unwarranted. What would you say is some of the high points, some of the biggest reasons people should pick up a copy of Toxic Diversity?
Well, I think I developed a skill early on as a BS detector. I know other people have claimed the mantle themselves, but I think I'm better than almost all. And as a result, when I read text, I listen to what people are saying very carefully, and I try to compare it to what they've said in other contexts and what they're saying on related points. And you always find something wrong there. There's something missing. If the goal of the activist is to protect his territory, her territory. In the case of women, it's to protect womanhood, and in the case of race, it's to protect the race of the person in question. Once that's your motto, and not to get at the truth, you're a lost cause. You can't speak up rationally on the subject matter because it's too painful for you to hear the other side. That's another answer to the question you asked me earlier.
Right.
Once you persuade yourself that you're innocent, and all the problems are the responsibility of the other side. Let me give you an example of something I just read recently that just blew my mind. This whole idea of, let me back up. There's something like 70% of black children are born without two parents in the house, two parents in the house. About a half of that number are white people born without two parents in the house. That's got to have an enormous consequence. It goes all the way back to the Moynihan Report. And what do you read now about this? What you read are all these sociological studies that purport to show that, daddy doesn't need to be in the home, that grandma and the uncles and the aunts and the cousins are all going to play a role in the bringing up of the child. That's just nonsense. And it's been recognized as nonsense by a whole lot of people, but you can't say it's nonsense because it goes against the grain. If you say it's nonsense, then you're saying that the responsibility for this situation is in the hands of the white community. And once you say that, and you say black people don't have any responsibilities in this case, then what you're doing is you're alienating those folks who think a little more differently, who think that people are responsible for the children that they have. And when they take a hike early on in the child's life, they're doing an enormous disservice to the child,
yeah,
whether white or black.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, there's absolutely no question. And again, we've seen this. We've seen it in the rise of gang activity in the country. We've seen it in the rise of prison populations. The majority of long-term federal prisoners grew up in a single mother home, specifically with the absence of fathers. And there's a reason those numbers exist, and it does not step outside of the fact that we hear a lot of the phrase toxic masculinity. Nobody gives true credence to classic masculinity. A young boy needs a strong father figure in the house to teach them how to be a man. You don't get that elsewhere, but they do these other things looking for that.
Yeah. You don't get it elsewhere. The schools are prohibited from doing that. They're prohibited from doing anything along the lines of moral education. So who's going to do the job?
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, Dan, unfortunately, we are running short of time at this point, so I want to give you an opportunity.
I thought we were just getting going.
Well, we really were. It felt like.
Okay.
I mean, that's always how I gauge a good conversation, and I certainly was enjoying it. But I want to give you an opportunity to let folks know where they can find the book and where they can find your other work, and if you're inviting people to follow you.
The book, Toxic Diversity, it can be found on Amazon. Toxic Diversity is published by NYU Press, an academic press, but it's readable. And this article that I'm referring to, specifically about the Me Too movement and believing women, is in the Touro Law Review, December issue, 2018, just came out. And the title is Why Not Believe Women in Sexual Assault Cases.
All right. I would imagine that you're getting a lot of pleasant feedback from some of your academic
let's put it this way. Right. I only look at some of the mail that I receive.
I don't think I blame you. All right, Dan, obviously we were just getting started, so hopefully we'll get a chance to get back together soon. And
thank you so much. I look forward to it. This was fun. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Dan Subutnick, professor of law at Touro Law School, and, of course, author of the book Toxic Diversity, Race, Gender, and Law Talk in America. All right, taking a quick peek back in the chat room now. I see that Alaska COG has joined us. COG, what's up? Glad to have you here. Thanks for joining us for this nearly over hour. Interesting conversation. And you know, it is always refreshing to talk to someone who works in academia and yet does not have any concern whatsoever about saying clearly what's on their mind without the PC, the PC filter that is so often forcibly placed on these folks. So obviously the professor, he calls it like he sees it, and he wasn't squeamish about any of it. And, you know, I got to give a hat tip to him on that. So he wrote some good points, too. And obviously that's one of the reasons we're having a guest on. Represent 907 you. Anyway, sorry guys, just in the chat room, glancing at COG again. Now, here's the big takeaway from what we're talking about, though, and we really did just barely get started on the conversation, so we'll definitely have to reschedule and get further in, see if we can't get a longer time block. But you know, if we are seeing real-world ramifications in our court system because of the forces of PC, not because of law and order, not because of the precepts that the nation was built on. And while the professor was talking about reasons why you should not automatically believe, and I think it is still, even though he made no qualms whatsoever and did not try to qualify it at all, I think it's important to realize that he's not saying you don't believe victims when they come forward. You take their word as an accuser, not as, okay, you're already proven to be a victim. Because it's not just the life on the line of the individual, and we've come across case after case after case of false accusations. It happens almost as frequently as freaking sorority parties. It happens a lot. And the other sad effect that we see in this nation with these younger folks, as they've grown up with helicopter parents with participation trophies, they have not been forced to mature hardly at all. There was a time quick play out to Annie and saying that next week she's going to have Wilfred Riley, author of Hate Crime Hoax, on her show. So be sure to check out Southern Sense Talk Radio next Friday. I think that's just another great, great guest that Annie's went out and gotten. That should be fun, and I'm going to have to mark that down. Although I don't really miss the shows. I may not always catch you live, Annie, but I do check you out in the archives. The point still comes back around to this. we have problems in this country, and part of the problem is we don't have expectations on our young people the same way we used to. There was a point in time in this country, and thank God we're not there anymore, but by the time you were 12, you had to be ready to go provide because you were needed to help with the family. You were required to work rather than go to school if that's what the family needed. So you had to grow up super early. I'm all for giving kids a chance to be kids, but children must learn responsibility, and they will mature through that. We have a lot of folks that are engaging in very adult activities without a very adult mindset, and that's really the overall overarching arch of today's show, whether you go all the way back to the beginning when I'm talking about how the Democrats threatened a filibuster, forced a vote to close the filibuster, and they didn't get enough votes to pass the Born Alive Protection bill that was moving forward. And if you missed the first half of the show, guys, please go back and check it. I would like some feedback on how that was presented. Just shoot me a message if you get the chance, just a small favor I'm asking for. And it's an open invitation to anybody else listening, too. If you're listening wherever, you can find me easy enough on social media. Some reasonable feedback, because a couple of times I felt like I kind of got a little overly angry to the point that I'm not sure I was communicating very well. But anyway, be that as it may, we literally have a Senate that refuses to acknowledge the personhood of a baby that has survived a botched abortion attempt. And we literally have Democratic senators who are standing firm on the notion that it is perfectly okay to murder a child after it's been born rather than have it taken to receive medical treatment. And here's an idea. You don't actually want the baby, put it up for adoption. Put that child up for adoption. Put that child in a home where it can be loved, the kind of love that your dark, dark soul is not capable of giving. And then when it comes to this family, these two parents that are suing Planned Parenthood, and if you guys haven't heard that story, please. There was a great link that Chief shared in the chat room, and you go back and listen to the first half of the show. There's not enough people talking about this story yet. I'm thinking maybe I've heard a few folks mention it briefly, not really go into it much. I think by the end of next week, it's going to pick up enough steam. People will be talking about it. Suing Planned Parenthood for $769,000 to pay for raising the child that Planned Parenthood failed to abort when they had to leave their home state. And then this, a very brief conversation, but a very poignant one that still goes around to the notion children must have responsibilities and expectations put on them. The notions of failure or success that is achievable through your effort must be taught in order for children to mature. That's why we've moved away from the sticks and stones that you and I grew up with. That being, you know, words are just words, yo. You throw a rock at me, yeah, that's going to hurt. You hit me with a stick, that's going to hurt. You fling some insults at me, those are just words, honey. We have the thick skin because we grew up understanding that that's all they were. They're just words, and words by themselves can't hurt you unless you let them. You have to choose to let it. But now we have this triggered, I need a safe space, PC culture of snowflakes that melt down at what they call a microaggression. Obviously, they would think it was an aggression if I was to sell one of them. You know what? Sticks and stones, baby. Because that's the way they play it. That's the way they see it. Chief says that he was going to talk about it last Sunday, but never got to it. That's why he had the link so handy. Well, I'm actually glad that you had seen it too, Chief, but I'm also kind of glad I got to it first. Now, but it, because it's so absurd, it's such an absurd situation. We've got two kids. We're pregnant again. But we have to wait so much longer if we stay in our home state. So we're going to travel. We're going to spend all the money we have at the time to travel. And then we can't afford to go back for you guys to try to make it right. Please, please, please. It's so ridiculous. So how did we get so far off track? Well, again, because we didn't put these expectations. Yeah, Kel, I've noticed that too. It's been kind of gradually coming the last few weeks, and now it's like almost all pink. crazy stuff. And if you want to know what I and Kel are talking about right now, this is my opportunity to invite you to come listen to the show live here at blogtalkradio.com. Look up Tap Into the Truth. That's T-A-P-P Into the Truth. You can find me right here and hang out in our chat room. More importantly, you can sign up for free and actually create your little screen name, or you can use your real name. Anonymity is not required, but it's available if you so choose. You can actually hang out and then actually participate. No trophies for participation, though. Trophies for actual accomplishment, like Chief, good accomplishment, shared links, got them in there. Kel, Annie, COG, all participating and strong accomplishments as well. So anyway, I see we're quickly running out of time now, so I'm trying to collect because, yeah, I keep drifting back between these two stories. I almost wish now I had waited for tomorrow's show to schedule the professor, because I still feel like there's so much ridiculousness left unsaid. But we're living in a time, these 44 Democratic senators have continued, when asked about it today, they continue to lie about the nature of this bill. There was nothing in it to restrict abortion. There was nothing in it to change your state availability. There was nothing in it to make anything harder. The only thing there was you were required to acknowledge personhood if the child survived the abortion attempt. You were required to get it medical attention. And if you were involved in the process whatsoever and you witnessed a failure to comply with that basic get the kid to the hospital business, there would be legal ramifications for you as well. It criminalized failing to bestow personhood on the surviving child. That's all that was in it. How have we gotten so black-hearted that there's not enough people in the U.S. Senate to acknowledge the basic humanity that we're talking about here? It's just – ah. Kel says, I bet he'd come back tomorrow. Maybe, but yeah, maybe. Not a bad suggestion, Kel. I'm going to have to leave things here, though. I've got to calm down. I feel my blood pressure getting back up over these two stories. It drives me crazy. But let me once again thank COG, Kel the Infidel Fox, Chief from Simple Facts, and Annie the Radio Chick Ubellis for hanging out with me in the chat room throughout the show. I also want to give a very special thanks to today's guest, Professor Dan Sabachnik, the author, of course, of Toxic Diversity, Race, Gender, and Law Talk in America. I highly recommend it. There is a link in today's show description if you would like to follow that to the Amazon. And no matter what else we talk about, just remember, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in some effort. And more importantly, be prepared to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. That's it for me tonight, everybody. I'll be back live again tomorrow night. If you're at KYAH 540 AM, I'll be back tomorrow morning the same time. In the meanwhile, this is Matt Fitzgibbons. Thank you, Matt, for letting me use some of your tunes. Check out patriotmusic.com when you get a chance. And I'm out. Good night, everybody.
Your BB gun was a world of fun when you were just a little squirrel. Using both hands. Founders knew the Second Amendment was the final one to keep, to hold our other rights intact so we'd never become sheep. Stalin, Hitler, Mao, Amin, and Pol Pot, they told us things that you never forgot. Is using both hands. Well, I prefer the 308 to the tiny 223. Gives me more than 1,000 yards to protect my family. Using both hands.